Hello and welcome to another episode of Full Court Finance here at Zacks. I'm your host, Ben Raines. And as always, we have an episode about the intersection of sports, business, and the stock market. And this week, we're going to be talking about soccer in America, specifically the business of Major League Soccer, MLS. It's a good time to talk about it because this weekend, Saturday, December 9th, it's already December, as crazy as that is, there is the culmination of their season with the MLS Audi Cup. And just recently, the MLS has announced their four cities for their two new expansion teams that are coming. So the league's growing. Games are on ESPN. Players are coming from all around the world and getting paid millions of dollars. But soccer has been the sport of the future in America for, seems like, the last 40 years. It's a polarizing topic. People either say it's going to be the future, it's going to take over the NFL, it's going to be the number one sport in America like it is everywhere else in the world. And then some people will tell you no one is ever going to watch soccer in America. It's going to be a niche thing. Maybe people will pay attention to it when the World Cup rolls around, though now the American men didn't make the World Cup, and maybe the American's women's team will be popular. But we're not talking about that today. We're talking about the business of the MLS, and to know about what's going on in the business, we have to know a bunch of different things. So we're going to talk about where the league is now, where the money's coming from, player salaries, expansion, who the current owners are, the TV deals, who their jersey partners are, and the future. But before we get into that, we need to know a little bit about the history of the sport. And even before we get into that, I have a little anecdote just as something off the top to sort of give a feel for what some people think of as the business of Major League Soccer. So when you just Google the business of Major League Soccer, one of the top search results is a Deadspin article that is titled, "Is the MLS a Ponzi Scheme?" So that's how some people are thinking of the MLS these days, as valuations are going up, but some teams aren't turning a big profit. But I digress. Now we're going to get into the history. So the history of MLS, Major League Soccer in America. In 1967, the North American Soccer League, the NASL, was established. And then by 1975, the New York Cosmos of the NALS signed Pelé for millions of dollars, and he was a global soccer icon, the Brazilian star who led Brazil to the World Cup. That was a big deal. They were selling out games in New York City when he was there. But then by 85, that league disbanded. There is currently a league that is the NASL, but it doesn't have anything to do with that league that was no more after 85. So then there was a 10-year gap where there was no professional soccer in America at all. And then in 1995, Major League Soccer started, and it really came at the behest of FIFA because the United States won the bid to host the World Cup in 1994, and FIFA said, for you to host the World Cup, you need to start an American domestic professional league or you're not going to get it. So people came together. The MLS was formed in 95. Their first game is played in April of 1996 with 10 teams. So that's where they were in 1996, 10 teams. They really only started it because they got the World Cup. And now, over 20 years later, it's a big, relatively booming business. So now the question is, what is the current makeup of the league? So Major League Soccer expanded to 12 teams in 1998, but then it took until 2007 for there to be a full continuous 13-team league. So almost 10 years to get one more team. They added Toronto FC, the first Canadian team in Major League Soccer, and then it really has taken off since then. So Toronto gets a Major League Soccer team in 2007. And then since then, they've added 11 Major League Soccer teams between 2007 and 2017. That also coincided with David Beckham signing with LA Galaxy in 2007. And that really helped bring money into the sport and eyes on the sport because David Beckham at the time and still is one of the most famous soccer players ever and one of the most famous people in the world. He might not be as famous in the States, but he is widely popular all around the world because he was a global soccer icon. And currently there's 22 teams. They're adding a 23rd Los Angeles FC next season. And the league hopes to become 28 teams within the near future. And currently, actually just recently, the expansion fees have gone up to $150 million for a new Major League Soccer team. 12 teams were competing for the chance to try to become two of the newest Major League Soccer teams. Just last week, on November 29th, Major League Soccer announced that Cincinnati, Detroit, Nashville, and Sacramento are the four finalists for the two new expansion team slots. They're going to present December 6th, and Major League Soccer will have their decision by the end of the year. And for some perspective on who is bidding for $150 million for a team in these cities, you have the CEO of the 49ers, Jed York. You have Dan Gilbert, who owns the Cavaliers. You have the Pistons ownership group, and you have some of the Sacramento Kings ownership group. So this is people who are in big time North American sports already, and they're now trying to get in on the ground floor, so to say, of Major League Soccer. And they're also going to add two more cities, and the people who are vying for that are Charlotte, Indianapolis, Phoenix, St. Louis, San Antonio, San Diego. So these aren't small cities. I mean, they're relatively small, but they're cities that already have major professional sports, NBA, NHL, NFL, and they want a Major League Soccer team as well. So this isn't some tiny city that's just like, we want to have one Major League team in our city. No. So that gives you some perspective of what's happening now. People want in on the league. You have David Beckham, who is trying to bring a team to Miami. He's been trying to bring a team to Miami basically since he came here in 2007. There's been some hiccups with that. People don't know if it's going to go through. But the gist of it is people now are trying to buy these teams for what they see as $150 million as a pretty cheap valuation. To put it into some perspective, in 2010, the Golden State Warriors, who are now the Golden State Warriors, sold for $450 million. So that's not that far off from a league that not that many people know about or care about that much currently in North America from what a big-time NBA franchise that had been around for a while was worth just 7 years ago. And on to current team valuations and who is involved now, you have Robert Kraft, who owns the Patriots, Paul Allen, who owns the Seahawks and the Trailblazers, he owns a team. Stan Kroenke, who owns a bunch of professional teams, also owns a Major League Soccer team. And you have the LA Galaxy. Reportedly, their valuation is $315 million, and it's up 20% from last year. They reportedly made a revenue of $63 million, which is pretty big for Major League Soccer. And then you have teams like Seattle, Toronto, New York City FC, in Orlando City, all worth over $275 million. And the average valuation for a Major League Soccer team is now around $232 million, so up about 20% in the last year or so. And about half of the teams of why these valuations are going up, about half of the teams are turning a profit, and they're all making around $15 to $50 million, even though some are making more annually. And that sounds like not that much, but when you don't have to pay your players that much, like this isn't the NBA where one guy in your team is making $15 million and you're thinking, this team only made $15 million, how are they making any money at all? A lot of these rosters are only $5 million total or sometimes even less. And jumping in off of that, what are the players making? Are the players making big money? Because that is then a sign of, is the league growing? Because if the players aren't making any money, no one's going to want to come to the league. The players have to make money to grow the league because the best players in the world want to make the most amount of money. So right now they're all in Europe. They're all in the Premier League or Spain's La Liga, stuff like that. So right now there are only six guys in Major League Soccer making $5 million or more. You have Kaká, Michael Bradley, David Villa, Sebastian Giovinco, Andre Pirlo, who actually retired recently, and Bastian Schweinsteiger. So only one of those guys is American, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. That means these guys who are at the end of their career internationally, who are top players in Europe in big leagues, come over here at the end to help grow Major League Soccer. And those are just the top six guys. There are 28 guys making $1 million or more, which is a lot of people. And then you have 100 guys making $400,000 or more, which isn't super far off from, say, the league minimum in the NFL. And you also do, though, have a lot of guys making the league minimum in Major League Soccer, which is $53 million. And that does sound pretty low, but for a growing league, and a lot of these guys are young, the guys at the end of the bench who might not play much, $53,000, not terrible. And that factors into then the salary cap is relatively low because you do have guys at the end of the bench who are only making $53,000. And that is also how you have six guys who make more in one season than the entire payrolls for four teams, which is Houston, Montreal, DC, and Minnesota. So you have six guys who make more than four teams total. And they don't, on those four teams, they don't have anyone making over $800,000. In the basic salary cap of the league, there's some variance on what exactly goes into it, but the hard line number is right around $6 million for their salary for the whole team. But then if you're thinking like, how does one guy make $6 million if the whole team's salary cap is $6 million? That's how they're getting the David Beckhams of the world and the David Villas of the world and the Terry Henrys of the world of MLS, because they have designated players. So you have three players on every team, supposedly, that basically the owner kind of pays out of pocket pretty much. I think that's how it works. So you can get these big names who you wouldn't be able to pay under this salary cap structure to help grow the league with these designated player exceptions. And now we're going to jump into a little bit of how the schedule itself works. Like, what does the league look like? Because a lot of the people, and that's a problem, is they don't really know what the MLS is at this point. Are they like the Premier League? When do they play? When are their games on? I think the casual fan really doesn't even have any idea. And I am a casual soccer fan. And truthfully, before I did a lot of research for this, I didn't know when the games are on, which is a problem that they will have to figure out, because if no one can just flip on the game when they know it's going to be on it. NFL, it's on Sundays. NBA, you know, they have Wednesday night games and Friday night games and Sunday afternoon games later on after the NFL is over. You need to have something like that for Major League Soccer. So basically, Major League Soccer season starts in March. They play 34 games, mostly on the weekends, some weeknights, and then their season ends in October. This year, it ended on October 22nd, and the winner of the regular season, so the team with the best record, wins the Supporters Shield. In a lot of other leagues in Europe, that would be it. The winner of the regular season is the winner of the league. You don't have a playoffs, you have in-season tournaments, but then when the season's over, the season's over. But this is America, so they want a playoff system, which they might have to tweak for it to ever get really, really big on a global level, but that's for a different time. So then they go to a 12-team playoff, which is going on right now, and that lasts for about a month or so. And there's some single elimination, and then there's some home and home. And then the final, which is Sunday, December 9th, is a single elimination game. And that this year is Seattle versus Toronto. So those are two of the bigger teams in Major League Soccer with a big fan base in cities that have really embraced soccer in general. And those are also two of the relatively newer teams. But the only problem is they're playing the final of their whole season on a Saturday afternoon at 4:00. That doesn't really scream out as we are a highly, highly successful sport, especially on television right now. If you're going to have the culmination, what's supposed to be the biggest game of your season, at 4 p.m. on a Saturday. So this week, they're not competing with big college football because those games ended last week, and then the bowl season picks up. I think the only game this Sunday is, or Saturday, is Army-Navy. So the timing of the game is not the best, but what is good is that for the first time ever, actually maybe for the second straight year, all the games are on television, so all of the playoff games are on TV. So that's trending in the right direction, and they were aired in 175 countries outside of the U.S. So you have people who aren't Americans, who aren't living in the United States or Canada, watching these games as well. Not a large amount, but any eyes globally helps grow the game in the perception of soccer in America, which is good in the long run for Major League Soccer. And then in terms of TV money, so these games are on TV, who's involved, how much money is Major League Soccer making on this? The current deal that Major League Soccer is on started in 2015, and it runs through 2022. And it's reportedly worth $720 million over an 8-year period. Pretty big deal. ESPN and Fox pay a combined $75 million a year, and Univision pays $15 million a year for a $90 million a year in revenue from TV alone. And that's a big deal because their last TV contract was like $27 million a year. So it's tripled over the last time, which is a big deal. So that means like the NBA tripled their or quadrupled or something like that from their last TV deal. That's a sign that it's trending in the right direction, that it's not going down. Obviously, it wouldn't go down, but tripling is a big deal, especially when not a lot of people yet are heavily invested in watching the Major League Soccer on TV. And Major League Soccer's deal for television isn't that far off from what NBC is paying for their English Premier League rights, which has been more successful on television here in America than Major League Soccer. So that's a good sign that those contracts are relatively comparable for a product that a lot of people here in the States think is far and away better, and that is the English Premier League. So to get down in more of the weeds of where the games are and how many games are on TV this year. So Fox, actual Fox, so like where you would see NFL games, for the first time ever broadcast Major League Soccer on their network. I think they did four games in 2017, and then the rest were on FS1, where a lot of their games are, for other sports as well. And then this year, ESPN carried 28 games, and most of them were on the flagship ESPN program or network, whereas in the past, a lot of them had been on ESPN2, which not everyone gets on their cable packages. So that's a big deal that they transitioned to flagship ESPN. And then you have TSN in Canada carrying a lot of their games. And they had something that I think was new this year was marquee Saturday and Friday night games throughout the season. And then you also have Univision carrying games as well. And what's even crazier in shows where Major League Soccer could be going and soccer in the States is that relatively recently, Major League Soccer rejected a $4 billion, $4 billion with a B, global rights deal for Major League Soccer. And that was from MP and Silva. They own the rights to Premier League and a lot of other stuff internationally. Major League Soccer rejected that deal because Fox and ESPN and Univision have the exclusive rights to try to renegotiate when their contract is up. And that $4 billion was also contingent on Major League Soccer adopting a promotion and relegation system, which, if you don't understand, that is what every other league in the world does. And that is, in general, at the end of a season, the bottom three teams of mostly 20-team leagues would be booted down to the league below them. So say at the end of a Major League Baseball season, the bottom three teams in Major League Baseball get demoted to AAA, and then the top three teams in AAA get promoted to Major League Baseball. And so that is how the Premier League works. That's how the German Bundesliga works. That is how La Liga works in Spain. All of the leagues have promotion and relegation. It gets fans excited. It gets fans from lower levels excited because, say, the team who won the English Premier League a couple years ago, Leicester City, they went from a team that was in like the third division of England to 5 years later, they're winning one of the biggest leagues in the world. So that is something that this company wanted to try in the MLS. And that might be, in the long run, something that works in Major League Soccer and something that can grow fans to watch it globally. Because it's not, right now, with like a playoff system and no promotion or relegation, it's not as relatable to the global soccer fan because it's just not something they know. And now to look into why people are willing to pay $4 billion or would be willing to pay $4 billion for TV rights for Major League Soccer. What were the ratings like? This year, the ratings, they're not great, but they're not bad. And the good thing is the ratings are going up, whereas the NHL's ratings are going down, the NFL's ratings are going down. And it would be bad if Major League Soccer's ratings were going down as well, because they don't have room to go down because they're already so small that if they were going down, that would be bad. And they're so new, that would not be good as well. But the numbers are, the average was 253,000 people watched national television MLS games. And that's up from 219 in 2015. So you have ESPN getting about 272,000 people, Fox getting about 236, Univision getting about 250. And it's good that it's growing up. And last year, the MLS Cup, which is, again, the final, the championship game of their season, drew 1.4 million viewers on Fox. So that's pretty big. But the average, like, weekend, Sunday afternoon games in the NFL get, like, 15 million. But this is not the NFL, and it's not going to be the NFL anytime soon. But the numbers are going up, which is good. What it is comparable to, though, is the NHL in terms of television viewership. Their ratings fell last season on NBC, which is who does national broadcasts a lot for hockey. They fell 7%, and they're only at like 460,000 viewers on national TV, and the NHL has been around for forever. So soccer is slowly catching up to the NHL in terms of television audience. And the NHL is currently, I mean, it's a distant fourth in terms of the NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, as the four sports, including the NHL, that most people consider the big four sports in America. But what is growing and what are great numbers right now and will probably only get better are in-game attendance. So at the stadium, which is good because that means you have a group of hardcore fans that are always going to be there. And it's good no matter what you're selling to have people that are really invested. Because I live in Chicago, I go to Bulls games sometimes, and I can say that a lot of the games at the United Center, at least recently in the last 5 years or so, are very corporate-y. A lot of people there don't really care what's going on at the game at all, which I've been to a Chicago Fire game, and people are really invested. You have fans who know the chants. You have everyone showing up in their Chicago Fire gear. You have guys at the stadium who are leading chants that aren't even watching the game. They're just there to beat the drum. It's become what you see on television in big European games where the audiences are doing unified chants all at once, and it's not something like piped through the intercom, like, let's root for our team now, repeat after me. It's a fan-driven thing. So that is good for Major League Soccer. Numbers currently, the attendance in Major League Soccer last season, 22,000 average, which is really good. 22,000 average, that ranked them in the top seven leagues in the world for soccer. And the attendance is up 60% since 2000, which is good for them as well. This year, Atlanta's new Major League Soccer team had the highest ever in-game attendance at 70,425 fans showing up to Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which is also where the Atlanta Falcons play. And they also set the single season attendance record on average. I think it was like 45,000 or so. And if you're only an NFL fan, you're thinking 22,000, that's nothing. The thing is, a lot of these are now soccer-specific stadiums that are built to be small. So the average capacity of a lot of these stadiums, and I looked at these numbers and then they're out there as well, the average capacity is about 25,000. And they're now basically filling up 90% of the stadiums at all times, which is a really good thing. And to only be behind basically the top seven leagues in the world, and they're only a distant seventh right behind Serie A and Italy, that's a good sign that they're growing compared to other big leagues in the world. And one of the last couple topics we're going to jump on is jerseys. And this is where the MLS also looks really good. Adidas signed them to an 8-year, $200 million deal in 2010, but then they extended it for 6 more years for $700 million through 2024. And that was the biggest rights deal for soccer in North America ever, a big increase. And Adidas is heavily invested in Major League Soccer. They're now spending like $117 million a season, and that is to sponsor the jerseys, the ball, and also have youth programs for soccer's growth in America, because Adidas is trying to capitalize on what they also see as the future sport in America. Not tomorrow, not 5 years from now, but maybe 30 years from now, as the NFL with concussions and all of that might slowly decline, that soccer could be that global sport. And there's also some big time companies that are involved in the business of Major League Soccer. You have Wells Fargo, you have Audi, who are sponsoring the Audi Cup. They've been a big sponsor of Major League Soccer for a while. You have Tag Heuer is the official timepiece of Major League Soccer. As I mentioned, Adidas, all states heavily into Major League Soccer. AT&T, Coca-Cola, Continental Tires, EA Sports, Etihad Airways, Heineken, Home Depot, Kellogg's, Johnson & Johnson, Target. A lot of these big sponsors are getting in on the MLS. And also what's highly important for sponsors is that as they do internationally, the players wear the logos on their jerseys, which is now something the NBA has adopted in just a smaller form. So say Seattle Sounders, they have the Xbox logo. So Microsoft is basically sponsoring, and the Xbox logo is bigger than the Sounders logo on their jersey. You have Alaskan Airlines sponsoring Portland's team. You have Target with a big Target logo on Minnesota's team. And that is something that international soccer has done for years and something that really can help grow a brand because it's just a walking billboard. All of these players are billboards for your company at all times. The fans are as well because all their jerseys are sold with Target's logo or Alaskan Airlines logo. And that kind of wraps up the business of Major League Soccer. It's been growing. TV revenue is going up. Jersey revenue is going up. You have billionaire owners of other pro sports teams trying to get in on the action. You have the league growing from 10 teams to 28 teams in the near future, relatively quickly. It's not been around that long. So soccer, for all the doom and gloom about, oh, the MLS isn't doing that well, but it's still really new. I mean, when you think about the NBA finals are on tape delay. Not recently, but when the NBA was still relatively new in the 70s, they were on tape delay. Think about that. And now the NBA is a huge global sport that signed a $24 billion TV contract. I mean, the players are making $30 million a year. So not that long ago, when they were new, they were even in worse shape than Major League Soccer is today. And you have cities like Toronto and Seattle and Portland that are growing a fan base of a younger audience, a more, you could say, hipster audience, which isn't a bad thing. They need to differentiate themselves. They're not trying to get the NFL fan. They're trying to get a new fan. And then some people will point to the fact that in the last couple of years, there's less American players in Major League Soccer. It went from 52% American-born players in 2004 to now it's 43%. And people will say that's a bad thing. I think that's a great thing because that means you have more players coming into the league who want to be here. This is where they think they can make the most amount of money. And the better the league is with players, the better everything is in the long run. I mean, the English Premier League is one of the best leagues in the world. People will say it's the most competitive league in the world. It's the richest league in the world. And like 70% of their players are not from the UK or England. They're all from all over the place. I mean, Spain, they have their league is a lot of Spanish players. But the best players in the world, you have Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo and a lot of other South American players. They don't play in their domestic leagues. Messi's not playing in Argentina. Cristiano Ronaldo's not playing in Portugal. Alexis Sanchez is not playing in Chile. They're going to where the money is. And the more money and the more players that are going to America for whatever reason is good for the MLS in the long run. And that does it for another episode of Full Court Finance here at Zacks. Until next time, I'm your host, Ben Rains. And remember, if you have any questions, please feel free to shoot us an email over at podcast@zacks.com.